This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program. On the line with us is Garrett Auer, spelled like the hour, H-O-U-R. Garrett Auer is with Municipal Broadband PDX. PDX is the airport designator for Portland, and so people who live here often refer to Portland as PDX. The website, municipalbroadbandpdx.org. And you can tweet Garrett at Garrett, it's two R's, two T's, G-A-R-R-E-T-T, our, H-O-U-R, or at PublicNetPDX. So what is this all about? Garrett, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So I have, go ahead.
Municipal Broadband PDX is a group which is pushing the city of Portland to create its own internet service provider, something that an increasing number of cities all over the U.S. are doing. It's an idea that has, since the repeal of net neutrality, really caught on. We are seeing, as a recent Harvard study has shown, that municipalities are capable of creating providers for internet service that are not only much higher quality, but much cheaper than companies like Comcast.
Yeah, aren't the shining examples Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Longmont, Colorado?
Yes, and more locally here, there's Sandy, Oregon, Tacoma, Washington. They both have municipal internet providers as well.
So how does this work? You know, my home has two wires coming into it. We have the Comcast wire coming in, and so the only provider that I can get is Comcast. For internet services, and it probably has old telephone wires wired to the house. We don't use them, but I'm guessing that there's a copper pair coming into the house. How do you get municipal broadband into the house when the internet service providers like Comcast assert that that piece of coax is theirs?
So that's a great question. Our plan for municipal broadband in Portland calls for fiber infrastructure, fiber municipal broadband to the home. So we're going to be running it all the way out to the home.
So you're going to be digging up the city?
Yes.
Cool.
That's the plan.
What's the cost on that?
So we're still working on an estimate. We're currently pushing city council to initiate a new feasibility study. They did one 10 years ago. The results of that were extremely positive. And we are pushing them to create a new one so that we can build a new comprehensive plan for it, as well as a business case for how this thing is going to be self-funded, because that's another thing that is really important to stress with municipal broadband is it's not taxpayers who are paying for it. This thing is going to be funded. The build-out is going to be funded entirely through bonds, and then from there, it's going to be funded by users who are paying into the system.
Right. Makes perfect sense. We mentioned five cities, Tacoma, Washington, Sandy, Oregon, Chattanooga, Tennessee, Longmont, Colorado. Is there any substantial difference in the way these different cities are doing municipal broadband? And is one of them a model for what you're trying to do, or have you come up with something that you think is different or unique?
Yeah, so we're currently building out our plan for municipal broadband in Portland. I'd say the big thing is, you know, the degree to which the business models on which you can do this thing, but it's relatively the same across those communities that we mentioned. Something that makes it a lot cheaper here is we already have a lot of public transportation infrastructure that we can leverage to, you know, just run cables through pre-existing conduits that we created for our public transit system. Hmm. So it's going to be a lot cheaper here. But to go get into any kind of like comprehensive plan for it, that's not something that I'd be able to speak on quite yet.
Right, because you're doing the study. But, mm-hmm. you know, the study you did 10 years ago is out there. What's the payback period? The payback period been for the cities that have already done this? Is it, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
So it could be as short as 5 years. It varies dramatically depending on the size of the build-out, how many subscribers they have. A lot of the communities that have done it already, you know, they can just get a fiber network up because, you know, they're kind of smaller communities. Mm-hmm. Portland would be a rather large city to build up this initiative. And I think that that's why this is so important here. This is why this is so revolutionary, especially in this moment when net neutrality has been repealed. It was lobbied very aggressively against by the very companies that we've trusted for so long to provide us with access to the essentially utility that is the internet. And now they want to control that so that they can make an extra buck off selling us access to websites like they sell us access to channels.
Well, now they're even keeping track of every website you hit and then selling that information to people who might want to, you know, advertise to you or sell things to you. It's totally bizarre. Go ahead.
That's the other half of the thing. You know, there's a lot of talk about net neutrality recently. Now, I was happy about that, all the attention that was getting. But something that kind of flew under the radar a little bit with everything else that was happening earlier this year was the repeal of essential internet privacy regulation, which allowed these companies to sell information about what you do online without your consent.
Yeah, and it's happening all the time. Well, they claim they have your consent because you clicked the box when you signed up for their broadband service. It's probably built into their terms of service, but it's still criminal, in my opinion, or it's just wrong. I mean, it's just terribly wrong. So if you guys can make this happen and you can run fiber into my home, what should I expect to get and what should I expect to pay for that?
So looking at the other communities that have implemented municipal broadband, $40 is a really good estimate on what we can charge. You know, it's still very early on. We're putting together a financial model for this right now. Nothing is certain, but what we can say for certain is it's going to be a hell of a lot cheaper than what Comcast is offering.
Yeah.
It will likely be half, if not more, or if not less, than the prices that Comcast is offering, and it's going to be symmetrical bandwidth.
So symmetrical bandwidth means if you've got 50 MIPS down, you got 50 MIPS up.
Yes, and that's which you often pay for like a maximum speed from ISPs, and that's just not what you're actually getting. You're getting a lot less of that.
Right, you're getting burst speeds.
A lot of the time.
Yeah, we discovered this when we were doing this show from Washington D.C. and we had Comcast. And we needed a reliable 5 MIPS up to upload our TV stream, you know, to Denver for Free Speech TV. It's it's not a lot of bandwidth, five megabytes.
It's not.
But we had to have 4 100 down, 20 up modems in order to have a reliable 5 MIP up continuous upload. And this is paying for commercial accounts. We were paying like $600-$700 a month for broadband just to get what, you know, you're telling me I could get for $40 a month here in Portland if we can get municipal broadband.
Yeah, so the service would not only be much cheaper, but it would also be, as I said, much higher quality, much more reliable, and it would be much faster. The infrastructure that companies like Comcast are using to deliver their service is actually quite outdated. So it would be an excellent move from the standpoint of organizations which, you know, rely on these services to support municipal broadband for that reason.
Yeah. Garrett, we just have 20 seconds left. Are you guys communicating with other cities? Is there a national movement for this? Is, you know, obviously people in Portland, municipal broadband PDX, but people all over the country who want to see this kind of thing happening in their community, do you have information on how they can do it?
Yeah, so I'd suggest connecting with other communities who are doing this. And, you know, we're actually having a rally coming up this Saturday at Portland City Hall, 2 o'clock p.m.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the number one thing I suggest is just organize for it in your local community.
There you go. And if you're in Portland, get thee to City Hall Saturday at 2 p.m. to encourage, shall we say, the city council and the mayor to consider municipal broadband for Portland. This is great. Garrett Auer, you're doing God's work. MunicipalBroadbandPDX.org is the website. You can tweet Garrett Auer or PublicNetPDX. Garrett, thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with Anything Goes Friday right after this. Oh, this is hysterical. In a week when this is... It's Andy Borowitz, of course, in The New Yorker. In a week when Donald J. Trump suffered the worst hair day of his presidency, North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un taunted his American nemesis by releasing a photo of his own hair easily withstanding a gale force wind. The photo showed a broadly smiling Kim, his hair seemingly unperturbed by what the state-run Korean news agency claimed were winds up to 50 miles an hour. According to KCNA's news release, Dear Leader's mighty wind-resistant raven mane easily overmatches the American dotard's sparse bleached strands. Perhaps in response to Kim's taunt, the White House doctor Ronnie Jackson held a hastily scheduled press conference to give an upbeat assessment of Trump's hair. I have thoroughly examined the president's hair, and my medical opinion is substantially thicker, lusher, and more luxuriant than Kim Jong-un's hair, he said, adding, I hate myself. I love Andy Borowitz. He is so good. Oh, my. Let's see here. Devon in Washington, D.C. Hey, Devon, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching us on YouTube.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, well, I think that public broadband is a municipal good. Kids needed to do homework and people needed to apply for jobs. And it's just a fabulous thing. And I hope it spreads nationwide.
Me too.
But what I called about actually was the man who called from John from Jeffersonville, Missouri earlier, seemed to be looking for some sources to track down where does the money go.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to throw out, there are some independent groups you can get online, like POGO, the Project on Governmental Oversight, and they have a whole contractor database where you can dive deep into misdeeds.
This is where your tax dollars are going, yeah.
Right, exactly, and in amounts that are just mind-numbing, and you can get onto the defense.gov contractor database website and see for yourself what gets awarded to each branch of the military every day, but that can get a little overwhelming. So the other thing I wanted to mention to John and for everyone, which is on the same vein, is that there's a show coming up next Tuesday on HBO called Atomic Homefront. And it's about the nuclear waste that was dumped around St. Louis from the 1940s onwards because, you know, this stuff doesn't go away. So, unfortunately, it's in a landfill that's been creeping ever closer to the population and leaching. And so it's, it's a show on HBO, Atomic Homefront, and I would encourage everyone to watch that. And
is it up now or is it coming up?
Coming up this Tuesday, the 13th,
okay.
February 13th. That's the premiere, I believe. And then you can also take a look, John and everyone, at ProPublica. They are, a nonpartisan research institute.
And they also have an app. In fact, I sent a note to Sean the other day saying we should get somebody from ProPublica on, on a regular basis because they I open their app maybe every other day, and every day there's some new just jaw-dropping study that they've done on what's happening in our government. It's just amazing. And I would think conservatives would be as excited about this as liberals.
You would think. So the series that Avram Lustgarten did, Bombs in Our Backyard, you can get into an interactive map, if you haven't done this yet, and see what's there. Because the wars that we've fought, all of the atomic and other waste, it didn't just disappear. So,
yeah, you're right. You're right. Devon, we're out of time, but thank you for the call. And thanks for watching us on YouTube. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Joe in Oakville, Mississippi. It says here you're a conservative who wants to debate me. Folks like that always go to the top of our list. What's on your mind?
Well, it's not so much a debate. It's just that, Sunday I was listening, trying to listen to different things on the radio and came across when you're on your station or this station and how hateful that some of the people were towards our president. Now, he was elected, and
sort of
being disrespectful. And when Obama was president, there might have been a lot of people that didn't like him, but he was our president. We had to deal with it,
right? And we had a member of Congress, Joe Wilson, who shouted, "You lie," during a presidential speech, which has never happened in the history of the United States. Talk about disrespect. We had a guy named
that
Donald Trump who was running around saying
that
saying, "No, Joe, hang on just a second. This is not Fox News." I will let you talk. You let me talk, okay? Can we just agree to this, Joe? You let me talk. I'll let you talk. Can we do that? Okay.
Yeah, but you asked me, and then you interrupted me.
You're right. I did. Okay. Well, you know, it's just you were concatenating. You were stringing together a whole bunch of things, and I felt like each one of them I needed to respond to. My apologies. But you know, the disrespect of Barack Obama, I think the biggest disrespect of Barack Obama was you had a guy named Donald Trump who for 5 years ran around and said that Barack Obama is not even a U.S. citizen. He was born in Africa. He's a secret Muslim. He's not even a Christian. And this was amplified and echoed throughout the media, you know, not just the right-wing media. And that's obscene. So anyhow, back to you.
And it was, and I'm sure that there should have, it might have been or might not have been an apology or something, and what he did was wrong. And I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is now he's the president, and there's so much disrespect and hate, not just towards him, but to Republicans, to conservatives. And it, you know, it just seems like, and the media has not even, the mainstream media, has not even addressed what is really going on. It's all focused on how we can get rid of Trump. Now, no other president has been treated this way as Trump has. And for the Democrats to sit for our American debts and for the heroes, and all, that was disrespectful, not just to the president.
Wait a second. For the Democrats to do what?
You know, pardon?
What did the Democrats do?
Sat. Instead of standing.
Oh, you mean like the Republicans did for every single one of Barack Obama's State of the Union addresses? In fact, Paul Ryan sat and refused.
It was to the American people. It wasn't for
Joe,
Trump. I'm talking
Joe,
about
hang on just
the
a
American
second.
People.
There are, go over to democraticunderground.com. You'll see a picture of Paul Ryan sitting and refusing to applaud as Joe Biden standing next to him is standing up and applauding behind Barack Obama when he gave his State of the Union address. Republicans refused to applaud or to stand for any of Barack Obama's addresses. This is not, yes, it's disrespectful, but it's not unipartisan.
It's for both parties, and I agree with that. But the thing is, okay, he's president. Drop it. Get over it. Get your tissues out. Go buy some more tissues and cry at night. But don't be doing it all and continue to do it day after day after day. People, the American people, are tired of it.
Well, you have two sets of standards, Joe.
No, I didn't. I cried when Obama got president, but hey, I got over it. I lived through the 8 years. It was hard.
But did you call out Republicans for not standing and applauding?
Oh, I would definitely say, you know, if they didn't like what... If they didn't like what he said, you can sit down, just like the Democrats did with Trump. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people who lost their lives, who the heroes that were there as guests, they could have stood up for them, not for Trump. If they
I see what you're saying.
For them.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, you know, that you could build a case for that. And I'm not sure if the Democrats didn't stand up for all of those folks or not. I would be surprised if they didn't, if some of them didn't applaud.
There was a couple of them that did stand, but there were your main ones did not.
Yeah.
And I agree that both parties need to come together and work together. And I'm an independent. I'm not either one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... Or I can call myself an independent. That's what I call myself. But, you know, the hate that is going around is it's horrible.
And I'll give you some ammunition, okay? The showing up for the State of the Union address is a sign of respect for the presidency, which I think is what you're saying. You want the office to be honored. And the man who holds the office deserves some respect because he holds that office. Showing up to the event is that sign. This time, there were a number of Democrats who didn't show up. And you could make a strong case, and I would not argue with you, that those people who did not show up were being disrespectful for Donald Trump. They would argue that he has not earned their respect, and I get that, but I'm not sure I agree with it. On the other hand, throughout the course of a presidential speech, a State of the Union address in particular, the president typically lays out his policy goals. He says, this is where I think we should go. And if you don't agree with that, the tradition, and it's a tradition that literally goes back to the early years of the Republic. I mean, they didn't start reading State of the Union addresses until the 1820s, but it goes back to then. that traditionally, if you disagree with what he is saying, you don't shout, you don't throw shoes, you don't yell, you lie, you just sit there quietly. So I think if you want to, you know, argue that the Democrats were being disrespectful to Donald Trump, that you should go after the Democrats who chose the, and it wasn't a lot, I think it was 6 or 8 of them, who chose not even to show up. Makes sense?
Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
Okay. So what, you know, on a policy level, what's your complaint with the Democrats? Because I'm guessing if you're all this upset about Democrats, there must be some specific things that the Democrats are doing that you don't like, or the Republicans are doing that you do like. I'm curious what they are.
Well, I don't think they're all for the American people, but then I'm sure there's some Republicans who aren't either. But, you know,
but that's a generalization.
You know, just some, you know, they need to just drop it. Go on, do what they need to do in their job in Congress and quit trying to find ways to spend the taxpayer dollars in doing things that are ridiculous, that are...
Okay, I haven't heard any specifics yet, Joe, but
yeah,
but we're hitting the break. Joe, can you call me back next week and I'll you know, we'll try to get you in the beginning of a segment because we got hard breaks here. I can't stop the machine. And, you know, we can have a conversation. But come, my question for you is name one thing that the Republicans have done. Hang on just a second.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
If you can come up with one thing in the last decade the Republicans have done to help the average person rather than the rich, I'd love to hear it. We'll talk next week. Thank you, Joe. Welcome back. It's 34 minutes past the hour. This is Tom Hartman. It's Anything Goes Friday. And Devin, in Houston, Texas, you are on the air. Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
Thank you, Tom. Great show as always.
Thank you.
My question for you is, do you think that conservative mindset in general is incompatible with governance? The reason I say that is I kind of split it into two camps. The one camp is purely authoritarian-minded, so when they actually get government, they try to rule instead of govern. And the second mindset is the, well, they like to call themselves like a libertarian, is like a weird form of libertarianism, but their social of caring is so small that they can't empathize with other people outside of it. And to me, this just finds them the best. It's like what sane person expects something from someone they're not willing to do for someone else. Mm-hmm. Just like with that last lady, she's like, well, this is happening to me, but you're telling her this has happened to me is also. But she just like, well, she doesn't outright say, I don't care, but by her talking, she doesn't.
Yeah, well, let's not pick on a caller who's not here to defend herself. Here's my take on this, Devin, and it's a really, actually, I think a very, very, very important issue. In fact, we're getting a lot of road noise from you, so you've asked the question. I'm going to drop the call, but thank you very much for the call, and I'll answer it. My dad was a Republican. I grew up in a Republican household. My dad worked in a tool and die shop. He was a member of the machinists union. He had a good union job. He was able to raise 4 boys and put some of us through school. And he had a good wage. Every 3 years, he bought a new car. He took a 2-week vacation every year. He had a pension that he retired on that extended to my mom, who died a decade after my dad did. It was a good time. And the conservatives at that time, and my dad and I used to sit and watch William F. Buckley Fire in Line, you know, on PBS. This was back in the 60s. And we debated politics our whole lives. But my dad would not, in my opinion, be a Republican today. When Steve Scalise gets elected in Louisiana by proclaiming that he is David Duke without the hood, you know that something wrong has happened. Now, this was part of the Democratic Party at one time. The Democratic Party up until the 60s, up until the Civil Rights Act, when Lyndon Johnson said to Bill Moyers, you know, if I sign this legislation, the Democratic Party is going to lose the South for a generation, he was right. Because the Democratic Party had been a pro-segregation, anti-integration party up until the mid-60s or in the early 60s. John Kennedy was opposed to this, too. But the Democratic Party got their act together. Robert Byrd condemned the Klan and left the Klan. And was, I think, the last Democrat who had ever been a Klan member who was in Congress. And Robert Byrd is long dead. He died in his 90s a decade ago or thereabouts. The Republican Party, though, I mean, literally, Steve Scalise said, "I am David Duke without the hood." This is that you've got Republican. There's actual a guy named Andrew. Is it Arthur Johnson? Is his name, or Arthur Jones? What? Arthur Jones, I think. Yeah, you've got a Republican right now who is an open Nazi running. I mean, he was on TV just, you know, yesterday, the day before on CNN, proclaiming his Nazism, racial supremacy, you know, white supremacy, all this kind of stuff. That would not happen in the Democratic Party today. But it's not Republican Democrat. It's really conservative Republican. What has happened is since 1976 with the Buckley decision in the Supreme Court, which said that if billionaires want to own politicians, they can. That is considered, pouring money into politics is considered under the Buckley decision in 76, free speech under the First Amendment. Now, prior to 76, it was regulated, particularly after 73, after the Nixon scandals, all kinds of reforms were passed. You couldn't give more than $1,200 to a politician, couldn't give more than, I think it was $2,400 to a party. It locked out the billionaires from controlling our politics. But after the Buckley decision, and particularly after Citizens United in 2010, but Buckley really started it, because this was something that the whole Reagan machine took huge advantage of. The billionaire class and the big corporations basically walked in and took over the Republican Party. So you now have a Republican Party that is no longer conservative the way my dad was conservative. Barry Goldwater would repudiate this party. Even on the social stuff, I mean, Barry Goldwater famously said you don't have to be straight to shoot straight. He was fine with gays in the military. This Republican Party that calls itself conservative, and I wince every time I hear the word conservative, is not really conservative. Richard Nixon was a conservative, and Richard Nixon was fine with the Environmental Protection Agency. I mean, he tried to stop it, but he enforced it. He promoted it. He put somebody in charge of it that actually enforced the law. Now you've got somebody running the EPA who is nakedly trying to take it apart. They don't care if you are poisoned by your air or water, as long as Koch Industries makes more profit. Because, you know, the guys who own Koch Industries, the Koch brothers, and their network are pouring $400 million into the election cycle just this year. $400 million. You can buy a hell of a lot of Republican politicians with $400 million. So the Republican Party has, by and large, with a few exceptions, and John McCain and basically the ones who are being pushed out, Jeff Flake, Bob Corker, they stood up and said, no, this is not how our party should be. You know, we're conservatives in the mold of Barry Goldwater. And what that was defined as back in that day, and the way my father defined conservatism, is, yes, of course we want progress. We want the nation to move forward. We want people to have, I mean, keep in mind, Dwight Eisenhower's 1956 re-election platform. And if there are any conservatives listening, I encourage you to Google this. You will find it. It's all over the internet. It's easy to find. The Republican Party's platform in 1956. And Dwight Eisenhower, what he explicitly not only campaigned on, but advertised in his campaigns, and you can find those online as well. Dwight Eisenhower, conservative Republican, when conservative actually meant conservative, not corporate bought and owned. Dwight Eisenhower campaigned on the fact that he had increased union membership by over 2 million people. He campaigned on the fact that he had increased Social Security benefits and added over 1 million people to the Social Security rolls. Dwight Eisenhower campaigned on the fact that they had built over 100,000 units of low-income housing for people to deal with homelessness in the United States, particularly homeless vets who had come back from World War II. Dwight Eisenhower wanted to expand the public good. He just wanted to do it in a conservative fashion, which meant slowly, carefully, thoughtfully, and as inexpensively as possible. All of that is out the window now. Now you have a Republican Party that calls itself conservative, and I don't know why news reporters say this is conservative to pass a $5 trillion tax cut, 80% of which goes to the top 1% of the United States. 80%. And, you know, to pass that and borrow $1.5 trillion, which is going to add around $2 trillion, excuse me, to our national debt when you include the interest on the payments. Adding $2 trillion to our national debt, literally borrowing $2 trillion to hand to the Koch brothers, to hand to the Waltons, who are you know, getting tens of billions of dollars in tax cuts this year and going forward. That's not conservative. That's being a shill for billionaires. They're giving Apple, you know, a huge multi tens of billion dollar tax cut. That's not conservative. That's being a shill for a big business that is so unpatriotic that they don't manufacture in the United States. And with all the pressure that's been put on them, they're still telling us that we can go screw ourselves. They're going to continue manufacturing in China. And it's not just Apple. Trump products are made in China. Ivanka Trump products are made in China. We have lost 97,000 manufacturing jobs since Trump became president. But this is not Donald Trump's fault. In fact, he has pointed this out on the campaign trail. It's just that as president, he's doing squat. This all started back with Reagan. Reagan started this process of so-called free trade, started promoting it. And then it went on steroids in the early on in the Clinton administration with NAFTA. And then we got CAFTA, and then we got all these other, you know, SHAFTA, all these free, so-called free trade agreements. And on average, over the last 30 years, since this process started during the Reagan administration, we've lost about 100,000 U.S. manufacturing jobs every single year. That's the average. Millions of jobs in total have gone overseas. And nothing is reversing that. That's not conservative. That's got nothing to do with conservative. I asked the caller earlier to name one thing. We ran this contest for years on this program. If you can name one thing that Republicans have done that principally benefits working people, rather than just the super rich or corporations. And typically they'll call up and they'll say, well, we got a big tax cut out of George Bush. 90% of that tax cut went to the top 10%. 78% of it went to the top 1%. Again, that wasn't for the average working person. In fact, it was Bernie Sanders who shamed George W. Bush by saying, hey, let's give $300 to everybody. And so $300, you know, a check, one-time check went out to everybody along with a piece of paper. I got one in the mail, along with a piece of paper saying, this is from George W. Bush. It's a gift to you, basically, you know, to help his reelection. But that's not conservative either. Conservative is figuring out a way to move forward, move into the next century, to move our country forward, only in a careful, cautious way. Liberals tend to say, oh, well, let's move forward in a more rapid way, and we'll fix our mistakes as we go along, because we want to see, you know, these changes happen quickly. Conservatives say, oh, you know, we're fine with the changes, we just want to do them carefully. At least that's how it was until the 1980s. But conservative no longer means conservative. Conservative now means bought and paid for shill for corporations and billionaires.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And it's tragic that people who watch Fox News or who listen to right-wing hate radio, which are both syndicated and owned by billionaires, Rupert Murdoch and others, don't realize that they're being played for pawns. Welcome back. Joy in Crescent City, California. Hey, Joy, what's on your mind today? Joy, watching Free Speech TV in Crescent City? Been on hold for 10 minutes and 10 seconds? Okay, no Joy. Let's try Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Lawrence, what's on your mind?
Well, I was going to spend an ordinate amount of time addressing that. She said she was an independent. We all know she was a Republican. She said she didn't watch Fox News, her last caller. We all know that. That's all she does, ingest Fox on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis.
Well, Lawrence, I mean, she was listening to Sirius XM, and Sirius XM has four conservative channels and one progressive channel. So, you know, the difference between the right-wing hate radio and Fox News is almost zero. So it may well be that she didn't watch Fox News. She just listens to the radio all day. But, you know, let's cut her a little bit of slack. She might be an independent who always votes Republican, if you will. I'm sorry, Lawrence. I don't mean to be pushing back against you. I understand where you're going, and I'm going to give you a chance to, you know, finish your thoughts. But I'm uncomfortable with trashing people who are not here to defend themselves. Back to you, Lawrence.
Right, and that's why I don't have any qualms trashing her, because I would hope she is still listening and would just not put up by a right ring guy just to call liberal radio shows, I would hope she would continue to listen to you and call back with her rebuttal.
Yeah. I agree.
The more the pressed her something specific, she had no answer. You know why. Here's, and you've seen this meme on the internet. We cried when Trump got elected because he is a racist. She said she cried. She cried because Obama got elected because she is a racist. Everybody's seen that meme before, but it's a very thoughtful meme, and that pretty much says it all about that. Now, here's, and I'm not going to say anything else about her. Now I'm going to talk about the Democrats in my last 30 seconds,
sure.
20 seconds that I got. And this is why Democrats are going to continue to lose, because these people bring their hatred. They bring a gun, and all the Democrats know how to do is give them the benefit of the doubt and bring pillows to a gunfight. No, the time is over to give them the benefit of the doubt. They elected Donald Trump fully knowing what this guy is about, and they still elected him. No, the time is not for us to be passive. No more of that. No, when you say you supported Donald Trump, you said, I am a racist. And that's where I start my conversations with these guys.
I'm not sure the arrow of causality is entirely in that direction. I think if you're a racist, you almost certainly are going to support Donald Trump and people like Steve Scalise. That's probably close to 100%. But there are people who are simply wealthy and they want their tax cuts. And so they're willing to tolerate racism and vote for a Republican. Does that make sense, Lawrence?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. I think what you're saying is if that's the case, why would Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice be associated with the with the Republican Party? Well, here's the break. So look, I hope she calls back and rebuttal. Thanks, Tom.
Enjoy I do too. Show. Thanks a lot, Lawrence. Good talking to you. We'll be right back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. We're going to check in with Talk Media News. Luke Vargas will be with us in just a moment. Welcome back. Let's check in with Luke Vargas with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. Luke, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tom, glad to be with you.
Great to have you. By the way, I should add, you are the chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News, and people who want to follow your Twitter feed, it's at The Courier, C-O-U-R-I-E-R. So the two Santa Claus theory is still obviously being the Jude Wininsky injected into the mainstream of the Republican Party in 1976, saying that when Republicans are in office, run the debt up as hard and fast as you can so that when Democrats come into office, you can scream about the debt and demand that they cut social programs, thus shooting the Democratic Santa Claus and turning the Republican Party into the Santa Claus of tax cuts. That seems to be running on steroids, but there's pieces to this program that was passed overnight, the two-year budget or whatever you call this thing, that have to do with the opioid crisis, CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, and I'm sure there's lots of other stuff. What's in it all, and what should we know about it?
Well, I think you're right to point out the sort of irony we have here about, you know, Republicans who didn't let President Obama do anything that he couldn't fully pay for. And even when he would lay out a way to recoup costs for expenditures, they were distrusting and or unwilling to let him, you know, have a longer leash. And now you have the vast majority of the new spending that is laid out in this two-year budget. There's just no offsets for it whatsoever. The only bit that we're hearing there's going to be at least some sort of plan to offset is going to be the $200 billion, which the White House is going to ask for next week for infrastructure. But the $165 billion going to the Pentagon and the $131 billion being added to non-defense discretionary spending, it is completely going to be paid for by more borrowing. And you've seen the Club for Growth come out and slam this budget. You've seen the Heritage Foundation slam this budget. And I think that's largely the reason why you saw, well, I think it was close to 70 members of the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives just not go for this. But the way they got this to pass was there were some spending provisions here, which Democrats like, and Democrats helped put this budget over the top. The CHIP, Children's Health Insurance Program, is extended from 6 years out to 10 years out, which had been the goal of Democrats on Capitol Hill all along. And there is $6 billion being put towards the opioid crisis, which is a good chunk of money. It is way less than many experts in the field who are looking at this as a true epidemic that is killing just as many people per year as the AIDS HIV crisis was at its peak, and yet being funded much, much less. But I guess when it comes down to the opioid funding, the concern among people concerned with this issue is that we don't know exactly how the money's going to be spent.
Are they going to use this for treatment or for imprisonment?
Well, Mitch McConnell said it's going to be grants, prevention programs, and law enforcement efforts. I think the concern is how much is that last pool of money, because, we've had a lot of research that shows that police crackdowns and increased
sentences
for drug users are actually make this whole thing worse.
So, interesting. Overseas, the Winter Olympics going on in Seoul, South Korea. Mike Pence went over there with Fred Warmbier. Did he meet with North Korean officials? And if so, what's going on?
He did not, though they were only feet away multiple times. It's kind of funny. I was flashing back today as I watched these images and heard these pool reports about Mike Pence at one point walking around a table of dignitaries who were eating dinner. And he came in late, so there wasn't a seat for him. He shakes everybody's hand and skips the North Korean president, Kim Jong-nam, but shakes the people to the right and left of him. And it's just the opposite image it conjured up in my mind of that Mandela funeral in South Africa. When you remember, President Obama sort of walks into the VIP box, and I'm not sure he even knew Raul Castro of Cuba was going to be there, but he said, look, I know who you are. I'm not going to be petty and not shake your hand. And you sort of explain it to the press later. That's obviously a different tact than Pence, struck here, where he's
Pence chose to basically be an ass.
Well, yeah, I was going to say you could say it's, he's upholding American values or he's being petty, but he's certainly not emulating President Obama. So, here's what we should watch. We've got a few more days of these two delegations being in the same country at the same time. There are rumors that over the weekend, this sister of Kim Jong-un is going to propose that the South Koreans come to visit North Korea later this year, which would be a step forward for the peace talks. But Mike Pence's aides say that while he hasn't ruled out the prospect of any meetings, that North Korea would need to agree in advance to give up its nuclear program before they'd talk, which, again, is not a sincere offer of dialogue, to be sure.
Not even close. It's catering to his base. That's bizarre. Justin Trudeau
luckily, President Trump is meeting with Henry Kissinger as we speak to figure out the North Korea strategy. So we're in good hands.
So all we need to do is carpet bomb them like Vietnam. We have 30 seconds. Justin Trudeau is in California. What's going on? He's the Prime Minister of Canada.
He appears to be quite successful in giving outreach to a bunch of companies saying, hey, the H-1B visa program that lets skilled workers come to the U.S. is under threat. Canada, we're actually going to fast track these, they call global skills strategy visa. So we've heard successful meetings with Amazon, Salesforce, a few other companies. This is another advantage that Canada thinks it can carve out relative to the U.S.
Wow. And having highly skilled people emigrate to Canada will be a good thing for Canada. Amazing.
It sure would.
Yep. Luke Vargas, Chief Foreign Correspondent for Talk Media News. You can tweet him at The Courier. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. We'll be back with more of Anything Goes Friday in just a moment. It is coming up on, it's coming up on the top of the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.